Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated Saturday and Sunday, August 8th and 9th of 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Parking Puzzle. This is under Champaign's Neal Street Plaza. As phase two begins, at least one business lamenting loss of spaces. This is by Jana Wiersema, Champaign. 40 years ago, David Meyer and his wife made what he calls the biggest investment of their lives, buying a building at 330 North Neal Street downtown to house Meyer Drapery Services Incorporated. The block had no retail business except for one adult bookstore, Meyer wrote in a letter to city officials. The former department stores were empty, although my building was used to store golf carts in the winter. No front windows, no heat system, no bathrooms, no plumbing. Tax records show that the Meyers bought the property for $90,000 in September 1986, equivalent to about $273,000 in 2026. Despite the hurdles to opening at the location, Meyer saw the building as a worthwhile investment because of two key features, parking and visibility. If he had known that the about 130 spaces located at the southeast corner of Neal and Washington Streets would one day disappear and new amenities would clutter up the area, he'd have made a different call, he said. The large parking lot west of Meyer's business is slated to be replaced with various amenities and green space during phase two of the city's Neal Street Plaza project, which began construction on Monday. This portion focuses on the north end of the triangular plaza, which is located along Neal Street between Washington and Main Streets. The final completion date for the project is July 28, 2028, though I expect for many of the plaza amenities to be functional and accessible by the end of 2027, said David Happ, a civil engineer with the city. Construction closures and arranging access. The current focus of construction is just roadway and utility work on Washington Street, starting near the intersection with Walnut Street, Happ said. The east end of Washington is limited to westbound traffic only, and by the end of August, both lanes of Washington will be closed between Hickory and Walnut Streets. The entrance to the parking lot at Neal and Washington Streets will still be accessible from the west, and Happ said the city aims to keep the lot open as long as possible. This year's work will focus on the east half of Washington Street and a pedestrian pathway south of the Orpheum that connects the plaza to Fremont Street, Happ said. The majority of the Neal Washington lot will remain open until that new pedestrian pathway is usable. In all likelihood, the lot will remain open until early 2027. He added that there will be some partial closures to the lot due to utility work in the meantime, but the majority of spaces will remain open. According to Happ, there are 129 spaces in the lot at Neal and Washington. He also said that the city seeks to maintain pedestrian access during construction, which will be taken into account as sidewalks are poured. We plan on placing customized signage around the plaza to ensure visitors can find their way through the construction, he added. Rearranged parking plans. While a previous concept for phase two included a row of angled spaces in front of businesses on the plaza, the current plan relocates it, quote, to the perimeter, unquote, Happ said. Plans include 29 spaces of angled parking along Washington, 5 parallel spaces along Neal, and 14 spaces in a lot north of the Orpheum. The latter area will switch from permit only to metered. Plans also include converting a lot south of the Orpheum into a pedestrian path from the plaza to the large existing parking lot at Fremont and Washington Streets. Meyer, who had hoped to see at least some storefront parking preserved, said he only found out recently that the angled parking inside the plaza had been removed from the plan. The vast majority of our customers are senior citizens, he told the News Gazette. Parking available at a distance is not a viable alternative for the majority of our retail customers. So unfortunately, due to our type of business and our clientele, that's really not that helpful. He recently sent a letter to Mayor Deb Finan, the city council, and other city officials about his concerns. When asked why the change was made, Happ said that a car-free plaza is a safer place, and concerns about vehicular safety arose after incidents in other communities. There was a high-profile fatal vehicle pedestrian incident on Bourbon Street in New Orleans, which was intentional vehicular terrorism, as well as the tragedy at the daycare in Chatham, which was the result of a medical event, he said. Following those incidents, there were concerns about vehicles circulating in the space. With all the events planned for the plaza, it makes the most sense to take vehicles out of the equation. A nice area where families can get together. According to Happ, phase 2 of the plaza project includes a lighted pop-chat fountain, a sloped lawn, musical benches, swings, public restrooms, a court for petanik, a game similar to bocce, unique signage to welcome visitors entering from Neal or Fremont, complete reconstruction of Washington and Neal along the plaza, including a raised intersection at Neal and Hill, to slow traffic and improve access to the Hill Street parking deck. Small business kiosks, which will be permanent structures on the plaza. Deuce Construction Company has been contracted to complete phase 2 for about $13.67 million. And the company could also receive a workforce diversity incentive of up to $341,700 from the city if certain criteria are met. Jose Reyes, manager at Collective Poor at 340 North Neal Street, was generally positive about the project. It'll solve a big issue we have in Champaign where it's not a very walkable space, I'd say, he said. Obviously, we see people walking around, but not nearly as much as we should, I think. So having a nice area where families can get together and walk dogs and all that sort of stuff is a great step. Reyes did express a little concern about the pop jet fountain and whether young kids might neglect to dry off before walking into nearby businesses. But he thinks the benefits of the project generally outweigh that issue. He isn't very concerned about the loss of storefront parking and feels that the lot at Fremont in Washington is currently very underutilized. I feel like that'll fix that issue as well, he said. However, he acknowledged that there are some questions about how the parking changes will affect local business operations, such as to-go orders at Smith Burger Company, which is co-located with Collective Poor. He also said, like Meyer, that the loss of storefront parking could be hard on the elderly. Some people like to park right up in front of us so they have to walk the minimal distance, Ray said. And would that deter them from coming in as well because they'll have to walk a little further? A built-in security system. Meyer is also concerned about how the kiosk structures on the plaza will affect businesses' visibility from Neal Street. He said having a store located along a major thoroughfare is like having a built-in security system. Thousands of people driving through the area means thousands of eyes and less opportunities for someone with ill intent to hurt a pedestrian unnoticed, he explained. That's why people feel safer walking along a major thoroughfare than walking in a back alley or whatever, Meyer said. So when those commercial structures go up between that and no parking, we totally lose the street visibility in that plaza. Which means if someone is in the plaza and they have an issue with an assault or whatever, they don't have that street visibility to enhance their security. In instances where the plaza is full of people for a specific event, this will be less of an issue, he said. Still, he feels that having booths set up during specific events and then taken away afterward would be a better way to add commercial vibrance to the plaza while preserving visibility from day to day. I don't see the plaza as going away, Meyer said, so I've reconciled myself to that for the last 13 years. Still, he'd like to make sure that his businesses and others remain alive and vibrant through the preservation of parking and visibility. No major changes planned. City optimistic on outcomes. Happ said that there is always the possibility of minor tweaks during construction, but he doesn't expect significant changes to the plan at this point. For example, we could decide that a piece of sidewalk needs to be extended or a ramp needs to be added, he said. Like I mentioned earlier, we may decide that there is a need to convert some of the parking spaces in the Washington Fremont lot to ADA spots, he added, referring to the Americans with Disabilities Act. Happ believes that the finished plaza will draw a lot of people to this part of downtown and said that businesses have reported positive impacts since phase one of the plaza was completed. Phase one focused on the one main plaza at Neal and Main Streets and included a stage, seating, swings, planters, shade, and art, with work wrapping up in summer of 2025. More information about the plaza, including ongoing updates, can be found at engagechampaign.org/downtownplaza. We are optimistic that having this new, freely available public amenity will help create the kinds of experiences that draw people out in the post-pandemic economy, Happ said. We think that with the day-to-day foot traffic increase, as well as the opportunity for new programming, the plaza will be very positive for downtown. And continuing inside the front page with Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. As much as she enjoys venues like Krannert Center for the Performing Arts and Hessel Park, concert-going Jongen Craggs said last month's shindig at Clark Lindsay was the best yet. No hustle bustle, she said. I just walked over, sat down, and enjoyed it. This year, the Retirement Village in Urbana introduced its summer concert series. On July 30th, Emily and the band played in the West Courtyard, a stone's throw from Craig's Villa. Earl Kellogg and his wife of 61 years, Jan, watched from their second-floor apartment before joining an appreciative crowd below for the final few songs. The acoustics weather, and set list were excellent. People can misjudge what music elderly folks might be interested in, said Earl, 84. If you're in your 80s, you're in your 20s in the 1960s. We grew up with rock and roll, and that's what they were playing. There wasn't a lot of dancing or cavorting, but it was nice. Clark Lindsay's Sarah Hawkins, then interim director of Community Life, in 2025 secured a grant to make it happen. The first two concerts were for residents only, but the final two, Thursday and September 10th, are open to the community. Just bring a lawn chair. New Souls is booked for this week's North Courtyard concert, which starts at 7:15 p.m. We saw a need for bringing people outside and taking programming to people at all levels of care, Hawkins said. A concert series is the perfect opportunity to do that. The concept was easy. We have the space. Let's do this. And the music resonated with everybody. In history, area history, in 1926, an unusual scene of mass violence played out this morning in Champaign. It started when two men tried to rob Hyman Greenman in his clothing store at 101 East University Avenue. Greenman ran outside, screaming for help, and the robbers took off running, chased by a motorcycle policeman and a growing posse of armed citizens. The outlaws holed up in a garage where hundreds of shots were exchanged between them and some 200 excited men. When one robber emerged from the garage to a hail of gunfire. He is now hospitalized with 8 bullet wounds. The other escaped into a cornfield at the north end of 5th Street. He was tracked through 5 cornfields before a shotgun blast by farmer Bert Garrison ended his life. In 1976, prison populations in Illinois have exceeded the Corrections Department's expectations. Corrections Director Alan R. Seiliff had warned that numbers of adult prisoners might reach 8,500 by the end of June. Instead, the adult institutional population hit 8,756. At the latest count, Stateville had 2,533, with a current capacity of 2,900, and Joliet has 920, including those in the diagnostic section. Joliet's capacity is rated at 1,200. In 2011, after weeks of intense debate, Danville school parents and guardians will get a chance to vote on a uniform dress code proposal for elementary and middle school students. Parents of kindergarten through 8th grade students will be surveyed on the proposal at registration. Each family will get one vote per school. The surveys will not be given at high school registration because those students are now exempt. Continuing with community news, we have an article from the University of Illinois titled, Give Her an Eye. Oakwood native named new Illini cheer coach. This is by Luke Taylor, Champaign. Stepping into the role of head cheerleading coach at the University of Illinois represents a homecoming for Michaela Greer, alongside a continuation of a lifelong love for her sport. Lifelong is no exaggeration here. Greer says there are baby photos of her in a cheerleading outfit. I have a long line of cheerleaders in my family, Greer said, so it's definitely a full circle moment. Of course, she wasn't performing on the sideline as an infant. Greer's actual cheerleading career began at the ripe age of 5. She started with Oakwood Youth Football Cheerleading and continued to stick with cheering at each school she attended in the Oakwood School District, all the way through high school graduation. In addition, She joined a competitive cheerleading team in sixth grade and stuck with that through her senior year as well. While attending the U of I, she joined the team led by then coach Stephanie Ruckard and says it's an honor to be passed that torch now. Ruckard served as coach for 32 years, marking the longest period any individual led the program. As team captain during her junior and senior seasons, Greer became very close with Ruckard. We hopped on a call a month ago and she's like, "You know, Michaela, there's no one else I'd rather hand this to," Greer said. "She made my college experience so elevated by giving me the opportunity to be on the team, but also meet alumni and have appearances and all the things that come with being an Illini cheerleader. The college cheerleading experience was the coolest thing ever, in Greer's opinion, giving her a front row seat to the team she'd been a fan of her whole life, as well as opportunities to engage with neat community outreach events. Even during college, Greer worked for the Universal Cheerleaders Association. She stuck with that after her 2020 graduation and continued to coach camps, including hundreds of high school age athletes. While she loved working with those kids, Greer found a big issue with the role. She'd get to know great young athletes over the span of a 4-day camp and then never run into them again. "I'm excited for the follow-through. You know, what are our goals? How are we going to reach them? And then at the postseason or the end of the year, what goals did we reach? What did we not? And how can we make it better?" Greer said. The role is changing as Greer steps into it. Alongside coaching, she'll be working within the athletic department at the U of I in marketing, community outreach, and fan engagement, all things the cheerleaders already play a huge role in. "My first goal, of course, is to prep the team for our first football game on September 3rd. But I'm also excited to get some more community outreach and fan appearances made for the team that we've not done in the past," Greer said. Greer said the best way the community can help support the cheer team is to follow them on social media to be aware of upcoming events and then actually come to those events. One other thing she's excited for, supporting Illini teams while they're doing well. "When the team's doing really well, that just means more opportunities for my cheerleaders to go to really cool places and keep cheering on the Illini in the postseason," Greer said. And from the Gibson City investigation titled, "One Year Later, Naked Gunman Yet to Be Found." This also by Luke Taylor, Gibson City. A Gibson City man has been missing for nearly a year after injuring two officers and fleeing, potentially naked, from his burning house. With little explanation and no updates from law enforcement on the situation, the, quote, naked bandit, unquote, quickly became a sort of urban legend, joining the ranks of other East Central Illinois classics like the emu that escaped from Danville and roamed the area for over 2 years. However, much like the emu, 71-year-old David D. Jordan is very much real. Illinois State Police say the investigation remains ongoing 12 months later. "I've never seen anything like this happen in Ford County, and I've been around since 2003, said Will Brumleave, editor of the Ford County Chronicle. He said even unrelated stories he posts about the Ford County Sheriff's Office or Gibson City Police Department get comments about the missing man. It all started early on a Saturday morning, August 9th, 2025. Kyle Shippard's car had broken down in Muhammad, and he was getting home late after someone offered him a ride home. As he walked up to his home on Ash Street, he looked over to his neighbor's front yard to see a man standing under a streetlight naked. Shippert later told the News Gazette that he yelled at the man, whom police later identified as Jordan, who then went to hide behind some trees, as Shippert called the police. Officers responded to the 100 block of Ash Street about 2:30 a.m., where they spoke to Shippert, then approached Jordan's house. Upon attempting to make contact with Jordan at his residence, officers were met with gunfire, state police said. Two of them, a Gibson City police officer and a Ford County sheriff's deputy, were struck and ultimately taken to a local hospital, where they were treated for non-life-threatening injuries. Meanwhile, a fire started at Jordan's house and spread to Shippert's property, later leading him to take legal action against Jordan in hopes of receiving compensation for his destroyed detached garage and damaged home. Sometime during the fire and ensuing chaos, Jordan fled. The Gibson City Fire Department was dispatched about 3 a.m. to stand by for the fire, with mutual aid requested from Sibley Elliott and Melvin Roberts. The next morning, fire crews combed through the wreckage of the house and found no sign of the owner. Later, the building would be demolished by the city. It was a total loss. Crews didn't leave the scene until around 1:30 p.m. Over the following weeks, tips prompted police response and searches in multiple areas, but nothing was ever found. It's still being talked about and whispered about, Brumley said. It's weird, man. I don't think anyone you ask around here would say otherwise. In a world of bizarre, it's about as bizarre as it gets. Theories abound. Some claim Jordan passed away in cornfields near his house. Others suggest he fled the state, or even the country altogether. Still others say someone could be sheltering in town. Few have any basis for those theories. Brumley said he never encountered anyone who seemed to have a personal relationship with Jordan. Jordan's record includes a guilty plea to a Class A misdemeanor charge of public indecency and lewd exposure in an April 2016 incident. He was sentenced to supervision, a fine, and medical mental treatment. Little else is known about him prior to the shooting and fire. I don't know anybody who did know him or even said I ran into him all the time, Brumley said. We talk about how no one recognized the guy other than that he was your average grandpa-looking guy. We don't actually know who he is. He is a mystery. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for the weekend edition of August 8th and 9th. Please stay tuned.